Yes, indeed. And this morning I am joined from the University of Minnesota. Julie Weisenhorn is back with us. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Hope you are, too. Happy belated to Carl. You had a big celebration for your husband.
Yes, yes. He had a big milestone birthday last Saturday, so that was a lot of fun. We had a good weekend. Enjoyed celebrating him.
Excellent. Well, we're going to put you to work today, as usual, answering our Smart Garden questions, Lawn and Garden questions for Julie. This morning, again, if you're familiar with the show, you know how busy we tend to get. So don't wait. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, call it in or text it in. Just one number will get you either. 651-461-9226 is the number to remember. Julie, I wanted to talk to you about, I sent you a little note about something I'm hearing and seeing, rather, a lot of comments from people about a pretty invasive plant, a flower, whatever, that I guess I've heard of, but I never really thought about it. And it's called creeping bellflower. Talk about that, if you would. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so creeping bellflower, the Latin name is Campanula rapunculoides. And this is a horticulture import from Eurasia. And so it was brought in other words, as a garden flower. It is a plant that has long stems and multiple bright purple bells that hang down along this stem. So it's a very pretty flower. We see bees on it. But it is a tough plant in your garden because it really takes over. It puts out a ton of seeds, over 15,000 seeds per plant.
Ooh.
And it will also produce what are called stolons. And these are roots that go along the surface of the soil. And then they actually project down into the soil, too. They put out these kind of finger-like roots that go down. So it is a very difficult plant to get rid of. Some of the lookalikes are harebell, which we see often up on the North Shore in kind of rocky crevices. It's a very fine, delicate plant. It also has a purple bell flower. But not so many, and it's a little bluer color than the creeping bellflower. And then there's Mertensia virginiana. This is a spring blooming, very truly blue cluster of flowers. If you saw them side by side, you would not see the same. You know, you'd see the obvious differences. But they all kind of go under this name of bluebells. Somebody might say, I've got some bluebells for you, Denny. Would you like them? And you go like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And then you wind up with the creeping bellflower in your yard. So it's a difficult plant to get rid of. The things you can do if you are opposed to chemicals or want to try this first, you need to do some serious digging. So you need to dig down at least 6 inches and be sure to remove all the plant parts, so all the roots. Don't pull the roots out, but try to lift them out so that you get as much as possible. You're going to have to do this again. It's not going to be a one-and-done kind of thing. You can burn smaller plants as you see them coming up. The leaves are kind of a triangular shape, and you can see them coming up, and you can burn or mow them. So you can keep mowing if you have an area. That will eventually knock down the health of the plant. But it won't work for mature plants. This is for seedlings only. It is a plant that grows in lots of different conditions, sun and shade and woods and fields. It grows in disturbed sites also. If you want to use some kind of chemical, if you've had it and you cannot get rid of it, you can use a glyphosate, which is a non-selective herbicide, so be careful where you use it, or something called dicamba, which is a broadleaf herbicide. Now, I want to just caution people with the hot weather that we're having that some pesticides, some herbicides that you use may do something called volatilization, where when you spray it and it's too hot, like in these 90-degree weather, this kind of 90-degree temperatures we're having, it can volatilize. It can turn into a gas and drift onto non-targeted plants. So be sure that you're reading the label. Dicamba, for example, should not be used if it's hotter than 85 degrees, which we've had and are going to have a number of days that are warmer than that, especially this weekend. So just be very careful with using those this plant is a tough, tough plant. And people think it's pretty as long as it's small, but boy, it takes over super fast.
Boy, that along with buckthorn, that's all we need, right?
And garlic mustard. Shall we continue the list?
We could do a whole show on that.
Let's grab a whole year of it.
In the meantime, Julie, let's take a phone call. John has been waiting on the line, calling in from Bloomington, I believe. John, what's your question for Julie?
Good morning. I belong to a large condominium complex, West Bloomington. The city of Bloomington gave us three free trees, and one was planted right outside my unit, and so I've been taking care of it. I've been watering it about three times a week with, you know, a gallon of water each time. The tree is about an inch in diameter. We got these in May, and shortly after getting them and planting them, the leaves started turning yellow, and some of the leaves started falling off, and I'm a little concerned. Second part of my question is, I was noticed that on my zonal geranium that I have outside, there's Japanese beetles on it now, so they're coming back. Those are my two questions.
Okay, great questions. Thanks for bringing those forward. I'm surprised a little bit about the geranium and Japanese beetles. They are being seen. We saw our first one out where I've been working on the foodscape landscape at the Arboretum. And I did see them in my friend Ruth's garden on her roses. So they are here, working on the foodscape landscape at the Arboretum. And I did see them in my friend Ruth's garden on her roses. So they are here. The important thing about Japanese beetles is to get out there and pick them off of the plants. The more they feed, the more beetles are attracted to those plants. So there's something in the feeding that attracts more beetles to the site. Kind of like, hey, you guys, come on over. This is delicious. So get out there and pick those beetles off. That's the first thing. You can drop them into a bucket of soapy water and dispose of them when they're dead. So about the tree, I'm curious about what kind of tree it is, but so that would be important to know. Also, what kind of soil you might have. So if you have clay soil, for instance, and you've been watering the tree, it may be that the tree is sitting in kind of a big pool of water, kind of like a bowl of water. It also depends on if the tree was planted correctly. So these days, the best way to plant trees, and this is based on research from our tree nursery at the university, is that we want to dig our holes wider and not as deep. And that if we have clay soil, you want to really rough up the edges so that the roots can start to work their way out of the hole into the rest of the landscape. When you plant a new tree, you need to water it every day, considering rainfall, but every day for the first couple of weeks. So you might have been watering a little, you know, not enough. But also, if you have clay soil, even watering less than normal, you're going to have that tree may be sitting in water. So it's important to find out a little bit more about the kind of soil that the plant is in. Maybe dig down, take a shovel or a spade, dig down and check it out. If it is very heavy clay soil, you may want to amend it with some compost, work that in around the root area, and that will help to relieve some of the compaction of that clay. If you have sandy soil, that compost will help also. That just means that it's draining faster than it should be, that you need to water it more. So we do have a good webpage called Water Wisely, and you can find more details about watering newly planted trees there, and that's on extension.umn.edu.
And we'll mention that site, as we always like to do during the show. So stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll take a look at some text messages, and we have a bunch of them here on the show. Stay with us on News Talk A3O. This is WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We're here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming those lawn and garden questions either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is doing all the heavy lifting this morning, answering all those questions by phone and by text. You know, before we do get back, and I know we have a bunch of text messages, you want to kind of follow up on the Japanese beetle issue, right?
Yeah, because now we're starting to see them out there. It is the time of year, and they will be around for probably about 8 weeks. So we need to pay attention to them. And there is no getting rid of them. They are here to stay. So I want to just point out that we do have a good web page called Managing Japanese Beetles, and it has a lot of good tips for how to deal with the Japanese beetles. It talks about plants that they are maybe not as inclined to feed on, but they do feed on over 350 different kinds of plants. So they're pretty much generalist feeders. You can find that webpage on our yard and garden page at extension.umn.edu.
Very good. Texter wants to know, Julie, what causes all the shoots coming from larger limbs of my what I think are healthy trees? I'm seeing that a lot, too, lately.
Shoots from larger limbs, such as, do you think that they're talking about, like, vertical shoots that come off those? Like, those kind of
sure.
straight up?
And I'm seeing them from the limbs. I'm talking about a hibiscus tree now, because even from the ground up and from the vertical trunk, they're coming out.
Okay.
So I assume that's what the listener's asking about. But just
yeah.
in general. Well,
there are different kinds of shoots, of course, that grow. One is called a water sprout, and these we see especially after pruning, say, apple trees. And they grow through the year. You'll see them in the spring, especially when the leaves have not opened up yet. And they're very obvious. They go right off of the branch. They're considered non-productive, and we prune those off. But they will produce, the tree will produce more when we prune. So be prepared that every year you'll need to do that. And that's just a great way to open up the canopy of the plant. Other shoots like sprouts that are around the base of trees, those can be pruned off. Those are just suckers, they're called. And there are plants that are more prone to that. Apple trees are prone to that. Also, some of our shrubs that sucker quite a bit. Something like an aronia, a chokeberry, will sucker. And sometimes you want that because these plants are creating kind of a colony. And sometimes you do want that kind of a colony. You want a spreading type of woody hedge, for example. So those you can choose to prune as you wish. But just note that when you do look at plants, kind of learn about them when you're going to buy them and determine if a plant that suckers is one that you'll be able to manage appropriately or that you want for that location.
Julie, listener wants you to put on your entomologist hat now. And
wait a minute.
Find out.
Let
how
me
do
find
I do
it.
I've seen comments, a lot of comments lately from people. What works to get rid of chiggers in my yard?
Oh, I don't know anything about chiggers. That is not, and I can't even with two entomologist hats on, I can't even talk about chiggers. But we do, I believe we do have a web page on that. You can read a little bit more about that on extension.umn.edu. Chiggers are tough because they're biting on us. So,
yeah,
very uncomfortable.
Maybe there's a spray, you know, pest
Take
control. I'm not sure.
Department of Health actually may have something on that, too, because it isn't a health-related type of insect.
But knowing our smart listeners, as you do, Julie, we'll probably get some replies about that.
Yes,
the show.
It could be also, sometimes it's the conditions that we have. We've had such dry conditions. Sometimes that makes an environment more prone to an insect.
You know,
the insect's like, all right, it's dry. So sometimes it's worse because of that.
Here's another one for you. Good morning. It says, Japanese lilac tree. Is it necessary to snip off the spent flower seed pods? The tree is tall, very hard to reach at the top.
You do not need to deadhead that tree. It's not going to affect the bloom for next year.
Here's another one. What growing zones will the lady slipper grow?
Oh, well, the lady slipper is our state flower, the showy lady slipper. I don't know if it grows anywhere warmer than zones 4, but it mostly likes to grow in zone 3 and 4. It may go down to Iowa in zone 5 and down to southern Minnesota, but I've mostly seen it growing in zone 3 and 4.
Three and four.
Mm-hmm.
Another critter question I have. Texas says, so many ant hills with tons of ants in my yard. How can I get rid of them? Oh, boy.
Yeah, ant hills are tough because those ants are pretty pretty resilient. There are some treatments, some chemical treatments you can use for that. We do have a good page on ants. You can also alter the conditions, so it's very sandy. I have a lot of ant hills sometimes when I in my paver walk because I have sand between the cracks there, and so sometimes that will you'll start to see those mounds. You could kick them down. You can pour hot water down them, and that may take care of some of the ants. It's tricky. It's really hard to do that. You have to alter the conditions. They like that sandy, warm soil.
This listener, Julie, says, I overwintered tubular begonias. They did well. Lots of green. Now right. They're outside and are not flowering. What should I do?
You may want to try a type of fertilizer that has a high second number. That's the phosphorus number. And a lot of phosphorus is important to blooming. So perhaps try kind of a stronger, they call them bloom busters and kind of catchy names like that. But it's that high second number.
Let's grab one more before we look at that hot forecast. The leaves on my tomato plants are curling up, and the tomatoes have black on the bottom of them. I water daily. Am I overwatering?
Well, the black on the bottom could possibly be blossom end rot, and this is especially prevalent in the first tomatoes that you see on a plant. The curling is in response to the heat. And it's a way that the plant is preserving moisture in its leaves or curling over to protect the leaf from losing too much water. And you can check out the blossom end rot information. It has to do with watering consistency, and it may be that the plant is either getting maybe too much water or it's not being watered on a regular basis. So there are a couple different things you can do about that. And oftentimes with tomatoes, it has to do with if they're in containers, that they are outgrowing their container. They just need so much water. Sometimes you need to water twice a day with some of them.
Okay. Hang on, Julie. We have about another half hour of the show to go on our Smart Garden show here on CCO. So stand by. As I said, we'll pick up on more lawn and garden questions after the weather here on Newstalk A3O WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming those lawn and garden type of questions for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Here is the number for either 651-461-9226. Julie, if we could go back a little bit to the subject of tomatoes. That's about the only thing. Well, my wife grows more stuff than I do. But I like the tomatoes, but I've learned a bunch of stuff from the U of M website. That's really a great source, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've got some specific pages just for tomatoes. I was reminded of it with the leaf roll question earlier and the blossom end rot also. So one of the important things to know about the leaf roll is that this is a physical disorder of tomatoes. It's associated with this really hot, dry weather that we're having. It is also a strategy, as I mentioned earlier, for that plant to conserve moisture. They roll over and protect their leaf surfaces, which prevents, it kind of holds moisture in those leaves. There's really nothing to do about it. It is just a condition of the situation that we have with the weather. And I want to just point that out because this is going to be the case going forward. The predictions are a hot, dry summer. So when you're looking at your plants, you're thinking, they're not looking very thrifty. They're looking a little wilted. They're rolling their leaves. Think about the conditions that these plants are growing in. So it is hot. It's dry. And it doesn't always indicate that there's a disease or an insect pest, but it's just a situation that the plant is doing. It's something the plant is doing to protect itself. So for all the tomato growers out there, take a look at our tomato pages at extension.umn.edu. Particularly look under plant diseases, and you'll see there's a page called Disorders of Tomatoes. And that is really an interesting page because I think most of the problems we have are disorders, are things that happen, like the blossom end rot and the leaf rolling, things that there's nothing to do about it or there's something you can do about it. And about that blossom end rot, take those tomatoes off now. You can slice off the bad part. You can still eat the other part, but then the plant can put more energy into growing healthier fruit.
Interesting. Again, check out the website for so much information, extension.umn.edu. Julie, let's grab a phone call. Florence calling in this morning on CCO from St. Paul, I believe. Thanks, Florence. What's your question for Julie?
Well, I have a lake place, and I've been invaded, I believe, with curly horsetail. It has taken over the entire hill, and I don't know what to do about it.
Curly horsetail. That is a really good question, Florence. That might be the stumper of the day.
Really? I looked it up on on the internet. I think I got the name from the University of Minnesota, I believe. It's a native plant, I understand, and it grows apparently with the through the root system, and it's killing everything I planted on this hill at the lake is what it is. It's just killing everything. It's just taking over.
Huh. Well,
let's do this. Julie,
that's a
let's
really
have
good
you
question.
During the next break, you could do a little research, a little homework when we do the next break in a few minutes, and maybe we can find out more about it. Yeah, it's great. You know that it's kind of fun because we're learning stuff every day, right? Keep our minds to it.
I know, that's the truth.
Speaking of hot and dry weather, Julie, this texter says, should I cut off the blossom of my common hostas to reduce the stress on the plant?
I don't think you have to. You know, of all of our perennials, those hostas are some of the toughest plants. You do not need to cut the flowers off. And in fact, they're going to bloom. They're going to start blooming pretty quick here. But, I don't think you need to worry about that.
Okay. Another listener wants to know, what's the best way to get rid of thistles?
Oh, thistle. Oh, my gosh. They're one of the toughest plants. If it's a Canada thistle, which is one of the most common ones, just FYI, these thistles have roots that go down a couple of feet, and they branch out at 2 feet down. There's an excellent cross-section image from, I think it's from Purdue University, that I use a lot to explain why it's so hard to get rid of thistle. Chemicals are the only thing that's going to get rid of thistle. Now, people burn thistle. That takes care of the top, but it doesn't do anything for the roots. The roots will just grow back. People pull thistle. You can't get all of the root out, so you end up leaving some root pieces in the soil. They sprout again. And this is part of the reason that makes them so difficult. Plus, they're incredibly hard to work in because they're so prickly. So really, you need to use a systemic chemical that the plant will absorb and move down through into the root system. It's the only way to get rid of thistle.
Okay. Another phone call. Joyce is phoning in from Crystal this morning for the show. Joyce, thank you. What's your question for Julie?
I'm wondering about oak wilt. I have an oak tree that's lost all of its leaves.
Okay. So oak wilt is a plant, is a disease that transfers between oaks. It's moved through forests by a beetle. And then as the roots grow together, say in a grove of oaks, they can graft to each other and they can also transfer it, you know, from an unhealthy tree to a healthy tree. So it's a very, very important disease to be able to recognize, and good for you for paying attention to your oak trees. The best thing to do, call a certified arborist, have them come in and assess it. It could be other things going on, but you would want to have somebody come in. And we have a good web page on that. It's on how to hire a tree care professional. It gives you good information, plus it gives you a link to where you can enter in your zip code on the International Arboriculture Society website, and you can find a certified arborist. Sometimes your cities will have an arborist also who can come out. It's very important to have this diagnosed correctly, because that tree needs to come out if it is truly infected with oak wilt, so that you don't spread it beyond that one tree. We avoid oak wilt by not pruning up through the middle of July. That's the high risk time is from April, early April through mid-July. It goes into a low risk time after that up to about November. Winter is actually the safest time to be pruning oak trees.
Yes. We're going to grab another call, but in the meantime, a bunch of text messages. Here's another one. I just noticed, texter says, my sedum has quite a few holes in its leaves. I've not seen Japanese beetles, but I'm wondering if they are eating the sedum or perhaps something else is happening.
I don't believe they feed on sedum, but but who knows? but I think I have not seen Japanese beetles on sedum before. It could be damage from just a random leaf-feeding beetle. If you can catch the culprit in the act, that's the best way, and then properly have it identified. You can, if you can get a picture of it happening, you can go ahead and send that into Ask Extension, which is on our Yard and Garden page, and Master Gardeners will help you identify the insect. You can just take pictures of the holes in the leaves, but it's really hard to tell what might be causing that without actually seeing the pest.
Okay, let's do this. You can do a little research if you feel like on that
curly horsetail.
Yes, the curly horsetail or whatever. I'm sure I can't remember what it was. But you do that, Julie, while we take this break, and we'll come back with some phone callers and texters on our. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming those lawn and garden questions, either by phone or by text, of course, 651-461-9226. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering those very questions this morning. Now, Julie, did you have any luck in locating any info?
Oh, let's see. This is about, so this is a, I'm going to go out on a limb here, no pun intended, and I'm going to figure that this is Echinacea scirpoides, which is a hardy and semi-evergreen plant. It is kind of curly, which is making me think that it's curly. It is a native plant here in Minnesota. So, and it spreads in kind of shady, boggy, wooded, moist, woody areas. So looking at the conditions that you have, if it's taking over, that may mean that you need to change some of the environment. I don't know if you're going to be able to pull it out. You can mow it when it's younger, but it may not be feasible to do that in the conditions that it's growing in. So what I would probably recommend is looking around the area and seeing if there's a way that you can open up the parts of that area to maybe more light. That would mean taking down some trees, unfortunately. Or that you may decide that you're going to, I think it's kind of hard to treat it. So with a pesticide or an herbicide to actually get rid of it. So it's, I don't have a very good answer, I'm afraid, but it is fortunately one of the smaller of the Echinaceas.
Right. Well, thanks
and
for checking that out.
I don't
out.
Have a good That's answer great. Really, other than opening up, changing the environment.
All right. Let us, well, we have callers, Julie, we have texters, we have so many folks to help out. Let's grab a couple of phone calls. Pat's calling in from St. Cloud, I believe, this morning. Thanks for waiting, Pat. What is your question?
Good morning. My question is, I just bought a house, and it has an old flowering crab in it, which hasn't been maintained for many years, and I'm wondering if I could cut off some of the vertical suckers that are on the branches.
Right.
They're like 2-3 feet, just to give it some air and stuff so it doesn't get a fungus and all that stuff. I mean, I know it's going to be hot weather and stuff, but could I cut off some of these suckers?
I think ideally you would wait until winter to do that. But you are correct in that those suckers, they're called water sprouts, are actually creating a denser canopy, which may increase some issues or reduce some flowering in the future. The problem with cutting them off now is that the plant may be susceptible to insect, might attract insects, the cuts, or it could also attract bacterial or fungal issues. So that's why we recommend pruning them in the winter. So unless there's a really significant branch, say it's a branch that's blocking a window or blocking a door, you could probably take those off. You might want to use a little bit of wound paint or a latex paint just to dab on that one spot. I would do it very selectively at this time of year. And I would really, if you can hold out till winter, that's the best time to prune a crab apple tree.
Okay. Another phone caller. This one, let's go to Shakopee. Cindy's calling in from Shakopee this morning. Hi, Cindy. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
My rhubarb is very spindly. It's not seemed to doing well. Does it need manure? And if it does, when should I do that?
I'm sorry, Cindy, I missed the name of the plant.
Rhubarb?
Oh, rhubarb. Okay. And the rhubarb is, I'm sorry, you were just a little bit unclear to me.
It's very spindly.
Oh, it's very spindly. Okay. So rhubarb is a big feeder. This is a plant that needs a lot of nutrition. So I would say start feeding it with a vegetable type of fertilizer. And it can be a general fertilizer. It doesn't have to be a specific one for rhubarb. It just needs to be labeled for vegetables and fruits. And I would do that. That will probably help to beef up those petioles. That's the part that we eat on the rhubarb. And also produce more leaves as we go into the summer. Right now, we're going to start to not harvest our rhubarb so that the plant can recover in time for it to go dormant in the fall and through the winter. So next year, we'll have a better crop of it.
Okay. This listener says this, Julie. Every year, my clematis comes up, looks good, but suddenly wilts, turns dark, and dies. What needs to be done to remedy this?
So clematis are plants that like to have cool, moist roots, but they need a lot of sun. So it could be that the could be a drainage issue. Sometimes our soil is heavy and wet. I would work some compost in around the root area, being careful not to damage the roots. And or if the plant is relatively new, if you haven't had it very long, is to go ahead and move it into a sunnier location with better drained soil.
Here's a lawn question, Julie. Tester says, I have a one-year-old lawn. I have these taller, thicker blades of grass popping up. He was checking around, Googling things like that. Says it's bluegrass.
Okay.
Any way I can get rid of it? It's mostly by the lake. What does it sound like to you?
Boy, I wish John was on. He could answer that probably. It could be a tall fescue, which has a very wide, broad blade. It might be also a, I don't think it's crabgrass. I think that's a flatter plant. It may be quackgrass.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Denny, do you think?
That's kind of what I found a couple of things in my lawn. That ended up to be quackgrass, and that sounds like it to me.
Yeah, and quackgrass is a perennial grass, and it grows taller than our other grasses, like our other typical lawn grasses. So after you mow and you see this kind of clump grow up taller than the rest, that's quackgrass. The only way to get rid of it is either dig it out, which is quite difficult as a big root system, or to spot treat that particular plant or that area, and then remove the dead grass and then seed with a new, the grass that's desirable.
Okay, very good. This listener bought some fruit/berry fertilizer to help the roots of my strawberries now that they are done and to help my raspberries as they start. But the bag says only use early spring. Can I use it now?
Oh, I would not use it now. I would save that and use it next spring. And I think that your plants probably would benefit from mulching, for sure. That would help to hold in moisture. And that mulch will help to break down a little bit and add some nutrients to the soil. You can also use compost and work that in as well. And I would look for maybe a different fruit fertilizer. Take a look at, maybe go back to your garden center. You could return what you didn't, you know, if this product, if you haven't used it, you could return it. Or you could save it for next year. And look for something that's more of a midsummer type of fertilizer.
I was looking ahead at some of the text, Julie, and that comment that one listener had that you did the research on, was it horsetail?
Yes.
This caller says, and maybe you said this, is referring to, and you said it, I think, equisetum?
Equisetum, yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yep, that's right. That's a genus. Yeah, there's a few different species. Scirpoides, I think, is the one, because she referred to it as curly horsetail, and that is a curly type of plant.
A couple of questions about, I know what you're going to say, too. One is, what can I use to prevent rabbits from eating hostas? And the other says, how to keep them away from my marigolds and hostas? And your answer would be?
A fence. Yes. Or I've had good luck with blood meal also. We're using that out at the foodscape at the Arboretum to protect some of the younger plants, and it seems to be working pretty well. It is essentially dried blood from slaughterhouses. Ours happens to be porcine or pork. but it is, it's hard to keep them away from that. And I'm curious because rabbits don't normally feed on mature hostas that have completely leafed out. They like to feed on those young shoots that are coming up in the spring. So maybe it's rabbits, maybe not. You can try blood meal. It does offer some nitrogen as well. Couple different nutrients in there. But yeah, I think that, I mean, fencing is the best way, and hardware cloth, yeah, I think, is one of the best types of fence.
Yeah. Keep them out of there. Julie, yeah, we have to run. We have less than 60 seconds to go.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
what we should do? Not only give us the website, the U of M, but tell folks to get to the Arboretum. Give us all that in 20 seconds.
extension.umn.edu. Remember, if you didn't get your question answered or you have follow-up questions, go to Ask Extension and send in. You can send in photos as well as information. And do visit the Arboretum. You need a reservation. You can get that at arb.umn.edu. Beautiful out there right now. Plenty of places to keep cool, too, even in the hot weather.
And you can get some to eat there as well.
Yeah, go into the eatery.
Absolutely. Julie, thanks so much. Always always fun. So we'll probably talk to you here in a couple of weeks or so.
Sounds good, Denny. Have a good 4th of July, everyone.
Yeah, you too.
Be safe.
Be safe. That's Julie Wisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, get to the Arboretum. Stand by after CBS News and WCCO News. We're going to be joining Andy Lindis talking about home improvement. So if you have any kind of a home improvement question, keep those in mind. We'll be fielding those next hour. In the meantime, we're going to be hitting a high near 90 today. Right now, partly cloudy, 74. Yes, indeed. And this morning, I am joined from the University of Minnesota. Julie Wisenhorn is back with us. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hope you are, too. Happy belated to Carl. You had a big celebration for your husband.
Yes, yes. He had a big milestone birthday last Saturday. So that was a lot of fun. We had a good weekend. Enjoyed celebrating him.
Excellent. Well, we're going to put you to work today, as usual, answering our smart garden questions, lawn and garden questions for Julie this morning. Again, if you're familiar with the show, you know how busy we tend to get. So don't wait. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, call it in or text it in. Just one number will get you either, 651-461-9226 is the number to remember. Julie, I wanted to talk to you about, I sent you a little note about something I've been hearing and seeing, rather, a lot of comments from people about a pretty invasive plant, a flower, whatever, that I guess I've heard of, but I never really thought about it, and it's called creeping bellflower.
Yeah.
Talk about that, if you would. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so creeping bellflower, the Latin name is Campanula rapunculoides, And this is a horticulture import from Eurasia. And so it was brought in other words, as a garden flower. It is a plant that has long stems and multiple bright purple bells that hang down along this stem. So it's a very pretty flower. We see bees on it. But it is a tough plant in your garden because it really takes over. It puts out a ton of seeds, over 15,000 seeds per plant.
Ooh.
And it will also produce what are called stolons. And these are roots that go along the surface of the soil. And then they actually project down into the soil, too. They put out these kind of finger-like roots that go down. So it is a very difficult plant to get rid of. Some of the lookalikes are harebell, which we see often up on the North Shore in kind of rocky crevices. It's a very fine, delicate plant. It also has a purple bell flower. But not so many, and it's a little bluer color than the creeping bell flower. And then there's Mertensia virginiana. This is a spring blooming, very truly blue cluster of flowers. If you saw them side by side, you would not see the same. You know, you'd see the obvious differences. But they all kind of go under this name of bluebells. Somebody might say, I've got some bluebells for you, Denny. Would you like them? And you go like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And then you wind up with the creeping bell flower in your yard. So it's a difficult plant to get rid of. The things you can do if you are opposed to chemicals or want to try this first, you need to do some serious digging. So you need to dig down at least 6 inches and be sure to remove all the plant parts, so all the roots. Don't pull the roots out, but try to lift them out so that you get as much as possible. You're going to have to do this again. It's not going to be a one-and-done kind of thing. You can burn smaller plants as you see them coming up. The leaves are kind of a triangular shape, and you can see them coming up, and you can burn or mow them. So you can keep mowing if you have an area. That will eventually knock down the health of the plant. And the but it won't work for mature plants. This is for seedlings only. It is a plant that grows in lots of different conditions, sun and shade and woods and fields. It grows in disturbed sites also. If you want to use some kind of chemical, if you've had it and you cannot get rid of it, you can use a glyphosate, which is a non-selective herbicide, so be careful where you use it, or something called dicamba, which is a broadleaf herbicide. Now, I want to just caution people with the hot weather that we're having that some pesticides, some herbicides that you use may do something called volatilization, where when you spray it and it's too hot, like in these 90-degree weather, this kind of 90-degree temperatures we're having, it can volatilize. It can turn into a gas and drift onto non-targeted plants. So be sure that you're reading the label. Dicamba, for example, should not be used if it's hotter than 85 degrees, which we've had and are going to have a number of days that are warmer than that, especially this weekend. So just be very careful with using those. This plant is a tough, tough plant, and people think it's pretty as long as it's small, but boy, it takes over super fast.
Boy, that along with buckthorn, that's all we need, right?
And garlic mustard. Shall we continue the list?
We could do a whole show on that.
We could do a whole year of it.
In the meantime, Julie, let's take a phone call. John has been waiting on the line, calling in from Bloomington, I believe. John, what's your question for Julie?
Good morning. I belong to a large condominium complex, West Bloomington. The city of Bloomington gave us three free trees, and one was planted right outside my unit, and so I've been taking care of it. I've been watering it about three times a week with, you know, a gallon of water each time. The tree is about an inch in diameter. We got these in May, and shortly after getting them and planting them, the leaves started turning yellow, and some of the leaves started falling off, and I'm a little concerned. Second part of my question is, I was noticed that on my zonal geranium that I have outside, there's Japanese beetles on it now, so they're coming back. Those are my two questions.
Okay, great questions. Thanks for bringing those forward. I'm surprised a little bit about the geranium and Japanese beetles. They are being seen. We saw our first one out where I've been working on the foodscape landscape at the Arboretum. And I did see them in my friend Ruth's garden on her roses. So they are here, working on the foodscape landscape at the Arboretum. And I did see them in my friend Ruth's garden on her roses. So they are here. The important thing about Japanese beetles is to get out there and pick them off of the plants. The more they feed, the more beetles are attracted to those plants. So there's something in the feeding that attracts more beetles to the site. Kind of like, hey, you guys, come on over. This is delicious. So get out there and pick those beetles off. That's the first thing. You can drop them into a bucket of soapy water and dispose of them when they're dead. So about the tree, I'm curious about what kind of tree it is, but so that would be important to know. Also, what kind of soil you might have. So if you have clay soil, for instance, and you've been watering the tree, it may be that the tree is sitting in kind of a big pool of water, kind of like a bowl of water. It also depends on how if the tree was planted correctly. So these days, the best way to plant trees, and this is based on research from our tree nursery at the university, is that we want to dig our holes wider and not as deep. And that if we have clay soil, you want to really rough up the edges so that the roots can start to work their way out of the hole into the rest of the landscape. When you plant a new tree, you need to water it every day, considering rainfall, but every day for the first couple of weeks. So you might have been watering a little, you know, not enough. But also, if you have clay soil, even watering less than normal, you're going to have that tree may be sitting in water. So it's important to find out a little bit more about the kind of soil that the plant is in. Maybe dig down, take a shovel or a spade, dig down and check it out. If it is very heavy clay soil, you may want to amend it with some compost, work that in around the root area, and that will help to relieve some of the compaction of that clay. If you have sandy soil, that compost will help also. That just means that it's draining faster than it should be, that you need to water it more. So we do have a good webpage called Water Wisely, and you can find more details about watering newly planted trees there. And that's on extension.umn.edu.
And we'll mention that site, as we always like to do during the show. So stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll take a look at some text messages, and we have a bunch of them here on the show. Stay with us on News Talk A3O. This is WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We're here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming those lawn and garden questions either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is doing all the heavy lifting this morning, answering all those questions by phone and by text. You know, before we do get back, and I know we have a bunch of text messages, want to kind of follow up on the Japanese beetle issue, right?
Yeah, because now we're starting to see them out there. It is the time of year, and they will be around for probably about 8 weeks. So we need to pay attention to them. And there is no getting rid of them. They are here to stay. So I want to just point out that we do have a good web page called Managing Japanese Beetles, and it has a lot of good tips for how to deal with the Japanese beetles. It talks about plants that they are maybe not as inclined to feed on, but they do feed on over 350 different kinds of plants. So they're pretty much generalist feeders. You can find that webpage on our yard and garden page at extension.umn.edu.
Very good. Texter wants to know, Julie, what causes all the shoots coming from larger limbs of my what I think are healthy trees? I'm seeing that a lot, too, lately.
Shoots from larger limbs, such as, do you think that they're talking about like vertical shoots that come off those? Like those kind of
sure.
straight up?
And I'm seeing them from the limbs. I'm talking about a hibiscus tree now, because even from the ground up and from the vertical trunk, they're coming out. Okay. So I assume that's what the listeners are asking about. But just in general.
Well, there are different kinds of shoots, of course, that grow. One is called a water sprout, and these we see especially after pruning, say, apple trees. And they grow through the year. You'll see them in the spring, especially when the leaves have not opened up yet. And they're very obvious. They go right off of the branch. They're considered non-productive, and we prune those off. But they will produce, the tree will produce more when we prune. So be prepared that every year you'll need to do that. And that's just a great way to open up the canopy of the plant. Other shoots like sprouts that are around the base of trees, those can be pruned off. Those are just suckers, they're called. And there are plants that are more prone to that. Apple trees are prone to that. Also, some of our shrubs that sucker quite a bit. Something like an aronia, a chokeberry, will sucker. And sometimes you want that because these plants are creating kind of a colony. And sometimes you do want that kind of a colony. You want a spreading type of woody hedge, for example. So those you can choose to prune as you wish. But just note that when you do look at plants, kind of learn about them when you're going to buy them and determine if a plant that suckers is one that you'll be able to manage appropriately or that you want for that location.
Julie, a listener wants you to put on your entomologist hat now and
wait a minute.
Find out.
Let
how
me
do
find
I
it.
I've seen comments, a lot of comments lately from people. What works to get rid of chiggers in my yard?
Oh, I don't know anything about chiggers. That is not, and I can't even with two entomologist hats on, I can't even talk about chiggers. But we do, I believe we do have a web page on that. You can read a little bit more about that on extension.umn.edu. Chiggers are tough because they're biting on us. So,
yeah,
very uncomfortable.
Maybe there's a spray, you know, pest control. I'm not sure.
Department of Health actually may have something on that, too, because it is a health-related type of insect.
But knowing our smart listeners, as you do, Julie, we'll probably get some replies about that.
Yes,
during the show.
It could be also, sometimes it's the conditions that we have. We've had such dry conditions. Sometimes that makes an environment more prone to an insect. You know, the insect's like, all right, it's dry. So sometimes it's worse because of that.
Here's another one for you. Good morning. It says, Japanese lilac tree. Is it necessary to snip off the spent flower seed pods? The tree is tall, very hard to reach at the top.
You do not need to deadhead that tree. It's not going to affect the bloom for next year.
Here's another one. What growing zones will the lady slipper grow?
Oh, well, the lady slipper is our state flower, the showy lady slipper. I don't know if it grows anywhere warmer than zones 4, but it mostly likes to grow in zone 3 and 4. It may go down to Iowa in zone 5 and down to southern Minnesota, but I've mostly seen it growing in zone 3 and 4.
Another critter question I have. Texas has so many ant hills with tons of ants in my yard. How can I get rid of them? Oh, boy.
Yeah, ant hills are tough because those ants are pretty resilient. There are some treatments, some chemical treatments you can use for that. We do have a good page on ants. You can also alter the conditions, so it's very sandy. I have a lot of ant hills sometimes when I have in my paver walk because I have sand between the cracks there. And so sometimes that will, you'll start to see those mounds. You could kick them down. You can pour hot water down them. And that may take care of some of the ants. It's tricky. It's really hard to do that. You have to alter the conditions. They like that sandy, warm soil.
This listener, Julie, says, I overwintered tubular begonias. They did well. Lots of green. Now they're outside and are not flowering. What should I do?
You may want to try a type of fertilizer that has a high second number. That's the phosphorus number. And a lot of phosphorus is important to blooming. So perhaps try kind of a stronger, they call them bloom busters and kind of catchy names like that, but it's that high second number.
Let's grab one more before we look at that hot forecast. The leaves on my tomato plants are curling up, and the tomatoes have black on the bottom of them. I water daily. Am I overwatering?
Well, the black on the bottom could possibly be blossom end rot, and this is especially prevalent in the first tomatoes that you see on a plant. The curling is in response to the heat, and it's a way that the plant is preserving moisture in its leaves, or curling over to protect the leaf from losing too much water. And you can check out the blossom end rot information. It has to do with watering consistency, and it may be that the plant is either getting maybe too much water or it's not being watered on a regular basis. So there are a couple different things you can do about that. And oftentimes with tomatoes, it has to do with if they're in containers that they are outgrowing their container. They just need so much water. Sometimes you need to water twice a day with some of them.
Okay. Hang on, Julie. We have about another half hour of the show to go on our Smart Garden show here on CCO. So stand by. As I said, we'll pick up on more lawn and garden questions after the weather here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming those lawn and garden type of questions for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Here's the number for either 651-461-9226. Julie, if we could go back a little bit to the subject of tomatoes. That's about the only thing. Well, my wife grows more stuff than I do. But I like the tomatoes, but I've learned a bunch of stuff from the U of M website. That's really a great source, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've got some specific pages just for tomatoes. I was reminded of it with the leaf roll question earlier and the blossom end rot also. So one of the important things to know about the leaf roll is that this is a physical disorder of tomatoes. It's associated with this really hot, dry weather that we're having. It is also a strategy, as I mentioned earlier, for that plant to conserve moisture. They roll over and protect their leaf surfaces, which prevents, it kind of holds moisture in those leaves. There's really nothing to do about it. It is just a condition of the situation that we have with the weather. And I want to just point that out because this is going to be the case going forward. The predictions are a hot, dry summer. So when you're looking at your plants, you're thinking, they're not looking very thrifty. They're looking a little wilted. They're rolling their leaves. Think about the conditions that these plants are growing in. So it is hot. It's dry. And it doesn't always indicate that there's a disease or an insect pest, but it's just a situation that the plant is doing. It's something the plant is doing to protect itself. So for all the tomato growers out there, take a look at our tomato pages at extension.umn.edu. Particularly look under plant diseases, and you'll see there's a page called Disorders of Tomatoes. And that is really an interesting page because I think most of the problems we have are disorders, are things that happen, like the blossom end rot and the leaf rolling, things that there's nothing to do about it or there's something you can do about it. And about that blossom end rot, take those tomatoes off now. You can slice off the bad part. You can still eat the other part, but then the plant can put more energy into growing healthier fruit.
Interesting. Again, check out the website for so much information, extension.umn.edu. Julie, let's grab a phone call. Florence calling in this morning on CCO from St. Paul, I believe. Thanks, Florence. What's your question for Julie?
Well, I have a lake place, and I've been invaded, I believe, with curly horsetail. It has taken over the entire hill, and I don't know what to do about it.
Curly horsetail. That is a really good question, Florence. That might be the stumper of the day.
Really? I looked it up on the internet. I think I got the name from the University of Minnesota, I believe. It's a native plant, I understand, and it grows apparently through the root system. Okay. And it's killing everything I planted on this hill at the lake is what it is. It's just killing everything. It's just taking over.
Huh. Well,
let's do this. Julie,
that's a
let's
really
have
good
you
question.
During the next break, you could do a little research, a little homework when we do the next break in a few minutes, and maybe we can find out more about it. Yeah, it's great. You know that it's kind of fun because we're learning stuff every day, right? Keep our minds to
it. I know.
It's
kind of neat. That's the truth.
Speaking of hot and dry weather, Julie, this texter says, should I cut off the blossom of my common hostas to reduce the stress on the plant?
I don't think you have to. You know, of all of our perennials, those hostas are some of the toughest plants. You do not need to cut the flowers off. And in fact, that they're going to bloom. They're going to start blooming pretty quick here. But yeah, I don't think you need to worry about that.
Okay. Another listener wants to know, what's the best way to get rid of thistles?
Oh, thistle. Oh, my gosh. They're one of the toughest plants. If it's a Canada thistle, which is one of the most common ones, just FYI, these thistles have roots that go down a couple of feet, and they branch out at 2 feet down. There's an excellent cross-section image from, I think it's from Purdue University, that I use a lot to explain why it's so hard to get rid of thistle. Chemicals are the only thing that's going to get rid of thistle. Now, people burn thistle. That takes care of the top, but it doesn't do anything for the roots. The roots will it'll just grow back. People pull thistle. You can't get all of the root out, so you end up leaving some root pieces in the soil. They sprout again. And this is part of the reason that makes them so difficult. Plus, they're incredibly hard to work in because they're so prickly. So really, you need to use a systemic chemical that the plant will absorb and move down through into the root system. It's it's the only way to get rid of thistle.
Okay. Another phone call. Joyce is phoning in from Crystal this morning for the show. Joyce, thank you. What's your question for Julie?
I'm wondering about oak wilt. I have an oak tree that's lost all of its leaves.
Okay. So oak wilt is a plant, is a disease that transfers between oaks. It's moved through forests by a beetle. And then as the roots grow together, say in a grove of oaks, they can graft to each other and they can also transfer it, you know, from an unhealthy tree to a healthy tree. So it's a very, very important disease to be able to recognize, and good for you for paying attention to your oak trees. The best thing to do, call a certified arborist, have them come in and assess it. It could be other things going on. But you would want to have somebody come in. And we have a good web page on that. It's on how to hire a tree care professional. It gives you good information. Plus, it gives you a link to where you can enter in your zip code on the International Arboriculture Society website. And you can find a certified arborist. Sometimes your cities will have an arborist also who can come out. It's very important to have this diagnosed correctly because that tree needs to come out. If it is truly infected with oak wilt, so that you don't spread it beyond that one tree. We avoid oak wilt by not pruning up through the middle of July. That's the high risk time is from early April through mid-July. It goes into a low risk time after that up to about November. Winter is actually the safest time to be pruning oak trees.
Yes. We're going to grab another call, but in the meantime, a bunch of text messages. Here's another one. I just noticed, texter says, my sedum has quite a few holes in its leaves. I've not seen Japanese beetles, but I'm wondering if they are eating the sedum or perhaps something else is happening.
I don't believe they feed on sedum, but but who knows? but I think I have not seen Japanese beetles on sedum before. It could be damage from just a random leaf feeding beetle. If you can catch the culprit in the act, that's the best way, and then properly have it identified. You can, if you can get a picture of it happening, you can go ahead and send that into Ask Extension, which is on our Yard and Garden page, and Master Gardeners will help you identify the insect. You can just take pictures of the holes in the leaves, but it's really hard to tell what might be causing that without actually seeing the pest.
Okay, let's do this. You can do a little research if you feel like on that...
curly horsetail.
Yes, the curly horsetail or whatever. I'm sure I can't remember what it was. But you do that, Julie, while we take this break, and we'll come back with some phone callers and texters on our... Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming those lawn and garden questions. Either by phone or by text, of course, 651-461-9226. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering those very questions this morning. Now, Julie, did you have any luck in locating any info?
Oh, let's see. This is about, so this is a, I'm going to go out on a limb here, no pun intended, and I'm going to figure that this is Echinacea scirpoides, which is a hardy and semi-evergreen plant. It is kind of curly, which is making me think that it's curly. It is a native plant here in Minnesota. So, and it spreads in kind of shady, boggy, wooded, moist, woody areas. So looking at the conditions that you have, if it's taking over, that may mean that you need to change some of the environment. I don't know if you're going to be able to pull it out. You can mow it when it's younger, but it may not be feasible to do that in the conditions that it's growing in. So what I would probably recommend is looking around the area and seeing if there's a way that you can open up the parts of that area to maybe more light. That would mean taking down some trees, unfortunately, or that you may decide that you're going to, I think it's kind of hard to treat it. So with a pesticide or an herbicide to actually get rid of it. So it's, I don't have a very good answer, I'm afraid, but it is fortunately one of the smaller of the Echinaceas.
Right. Well, thanks
and
for checking that out.
I don't
out.
Have a good That's answer, great. Really, other than opening up, changing the environment.
All right. Let us, well, we have callers, Julie, we have texters, we have so many folks to help out. Let's grab a couple of phone calls. Pat's calling in from St. Cloud, I believe, this morning. Thanks for waiting, Pat. What is your question?
Good morning. My question is, I just bought a house, and it has an old flowering crab in it, which hasn't been maintained for many years, and I'm wondering if I could cut off some of the vertical suckers that are on the branches.
Right.
They're like 2-3 feet, just to give it some air and stuff so it doesn't get a fungus and all that stuff. I mean, I know it's going to be hot weather and stuff, but could I cut off some of these suckers?
I think ideally you would wait until winter to do that. But you are correct in that those suckers, are called water sprouts, are actually creating a denser canopy, which may increase some issues or reduce some flowering in the future. The problem with cutting them off now is that the plant may be susceptible to insect, might attract insects, the cuts, or it could also attract bacterial or fungal issues. So that's why we recommend pruning them in the winter. So unless there's a really significant branch, say it's a branch that's blocking a window or blocking a door, you could probably take those off. You might want to use a little bit of wound paint or a latex paint just to dab on that one spot. I would do it very selectively at this time of year. And I would really, if you can hold out till winter, that's the best time to prune a crab apple tree.
Okay. Another phone caller. This one, let's go to Shakopee. Cindy's calling in from Shakopee this morning. Hi, Cindy. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
My rhubarb is very spindly. It's not seem to doing well. Does it need manure? And if it does, when should I do that?
I'm sorry, Cindy, I missed the name of the plant.
Rhubarb?
Oh, rhubarb. Okay. And the rhubarb is, I'm sorry, you were just a little bit unclear to me.
It's very spindly.
Oh, it's very spindly. Okay. So rhubarb is a big feeder. This is a plant that needs a lot of nutrition. So I would say start feeding it with a vegetable type of fertilizer. And it can be a general fertilizer. It doesn't have to be a specific one for rhubarb. It just needs to be labeled for vegetables and fruits. And I would do that. That will probably help to beef up those petioles. That's the part that we eat on the rhubarb. And also produce more leaves as we go into the summer. Right now, we're going to start to not harvest our rhubarb so that the plant can recover in time for it to go dormant in the fall and through the winter. So next year, we'll have a better crop of it.
Okay. This listener says this, Julie. Every year my clematis comes up, looks good, but suddenly wilts, turns dark, and dies. What needs to be done to remedy this?
So clematis are plants that like to have cool, moist roots, but they need a lot of sun. So it could be that the could be a drainage issue. Sometimes our soil is heavy and wet. I would work some compost in around the root area, being careful not to damage the roots. And or if the plant is relatively new, if you haven't had it very long, is to go ahead and move it into a sunnier location with better drained soil.
Here's a lawn question, Julie. Tester says, I have a one-year-old lawn. I have these taller, thicker blades of grass popping up. He was checking around, Googling things like that. Says it's bluegrass.
Okay.
Any way I can get rid of it? It's mostly by the lake. What does it sound like to you?
I wish John was on. He could answer that probably. It could be a tall fescue, which has a very wide, broad blade. It might be also a, I don't think it's crabgrass. I think that's a flatter plant. It may be quackgrass.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Denny, do you think?
That's kind of what I found a couple of things in my lawn. That ended up to be quackgrass, and that sounds like it to me.
Yeah, and quackgrass is a perennial grass, and it grows taller than our other grasses, like our other typical lawn grasses. So after you mow and you see this kind of clump grow up taller than the rest, that's quackgrass. The only way to get rid of it is either dig it out, which is quite difficult as a big root system, or to spot treat that particular plant or that area, and then remove the dead grass and then seed with a new, the grass that's desirable.
Okay, very good. This listener bought some fruit/berry fertilizer to help the roots of my strawberries now that they are done and to help my raspberries as they start. But the bag says only use early spring. Can I use it now?
Oh, I would not use it now. I would save that and use it next spring. And I think that your plants probably would benefit from mulching, for sure. That would help to hold in moisture, and that mulch will help to break down a little bit and add some nutrients to the soil. You can also use compost and work that in as well. And I would look for maybe a different fruit fertilizer. Take a look at, maybe go back to your garden center. You could return what you didn't, if you haven't used it, you could return it. Or you could save it for next year. And look for something that's more of a midsummer type of fertilizer.
I was looking ahead at some of the text, Julie, and that comment that one listener had that you did the research on, was it horsetail?
Yes.
This caller says, and maybe you said this, is referring to, and you said it, I think, equisetum?
Equisetum, yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yep, that's right. That's a genus. Yeah, there's a few different species. Scirpoides, I think, is the one, because she referred to it as curly horsetail, and that is a curly type of plant.
A couple of questions about, I know what you're going to say, too. One is, what can I use to prevent rabbits from eating hostas? And the other says, how to keep them away from my marigolds and hostas? And your answer would be?
a fence. Yes. Or I've had good luck with blood meal also. We're using that out at the Foodscape at the Arboretum to protect some of the younger plants, and it seems to be working pretty well. It is essentially dried blood from slaughterhouses. Ours happens to be porcine or pork. but it is, it's hard to keep them away from that. And I'm curious because rabbits don't normally feed on mature hostas, hostas that have completely leafed out. They like to feed on those young shoots that are coming up in the spring. So maybe it's rabbits, maybe not. You can try blood meal. It does offer some nitrogen as well, a couple different nutrients in there. But yeah, I think that, I mean, fencing is the best way, and hardware cloth, yeah, I think, is one of the best types of fence.
Yeah. Keep them out of there. Julie, yeah, we have to run. We have less than 60 seconds to go.
Oh, my
gosh. You know
what
we should do? Not only give us the website, the U of M, but tell folks to get to the Arboretum. Give us all that in 20 seconds.
extension.umn.edu. Remember, if you didn't get your question answered or you have follow-up questions, go to Ask Extension and send in. You can send in photos as well as information. And do visit the Arboretum. You need a reservation. You can get that at arb.umn.edu. Beautiful out there right now. Plenty of places to keep cool, too, even in the hot weather.
And you can get some to eat there as well.
Yeah, go into the eatery.
Absolutely. Julie, thanks so much. Always always fun. So we'll probably talk to you here in a couple of weeks or so.
Sounds good, Denny. Have a good 4th of July, everyone.
Yeah, you
be
too.
Safe.
Be safe. That's Julie Wisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, get to the Arboretum. Stand by after CBS News and WCCO News. We're going to be joining Andy Lindis talking about home improvement. So if you have any kind of a home improvement question, keep those in mind. We'll be fielding those next hour. In the meantime, we're going to be hitting a high near 90 today. Right now, partly cloudy, 74.